Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about the heat experiment that is a balloon-borne experiment that was designed to measure positrons and antiprotons in the atmosphere. And as it turned out, or as we think, as we have an indication for dark matter signal in our data, I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So first of all, with so many things, there are two kinds of cosmic rays. There are primary and secondary cosmic rays. So primaries are thought to be energized through a first-order Fermi acceleration at supernova shock fronts. And the secondary cosmic rays are produced by nuclear collisions in the interstellar gas. They are rare, but they provide important information on the propagation of the primaries. And the secondary component does include antimatter particles, and so those are the positrons and the antiprotons I'm going to talk about. In addition, there might be, and it has been proposed, there might be sources of antiparticles. And the most interesting, of course, would be a product of the annihilation of dark matter particles. But there are other sources or possible sources, pair production near pulsar poles, or production of positrons, for instance, in giant molecular clouds. And I'm going to not talk about that very much, but I show how it may look, a signal may look like. This is a collaboration effort, and this is the most recent version of the heat collaboration, four Midwestern universities, Indiana, Pennsylvania State, the University of Chicago, and the University of Michigan. As you see, some of the people, have meanwhile moved on. Let me start with antiprotons. As I already said, antiprotons are produced in nuclear collisions. And because the progenitors are mainly protons rather than nuclei, and because the production threshold is relatively high, that makes antiprotons a unique probe of the primary nuclear component. Now, however, the measurements are very difficult because, as you see, the fraction of people, the antiprotons, is rather small, and there is a large number of electron background. And so what we do need in order to find those antiparticles is a very good background discrimination in our experiment. If we do get a good understanding of the secondary spectrum, the secondary antiprotons, then we may be able to find possible signatures for antiprotons. The kinematic threshold is such that the antiproton spectrum peaks around at 2 GeV, and at lower energies, the spectrum is smoothed due to a solar modulation. What I'm going to show in this talk is not the proton as antiproton spectrum. So I'm going to show the antiproton over proton ratio, and that is typically done in order to eliminate possible systematics in the measurements. And of course, if antiprotons are produced purely as secondaries, then one expects that a decreasing antiproton over proton ratio at higher energies. I have to really hurry. Just to give you an idea how a signal of due to annihilation of supersymmetric particles may look like, in this paper it was discussed that at higher energies here, you see, you may have a contribution. This is this red line here. In your antiproton over proton spectrum. And see, you have to do very, very precise measurements in order to identify the signal. At lower energies, you may see a component due to the evaporating small primordial black holes. However, here, you have the problem that of the solar modulation inside of the heliosphere, and then measurements again will be very difficult, and you probably, in order to do clean measurement, have to go outside of the heliosphere. Before he did the measurement in the year of 2000, this is how the experimental situation presented itself. Most of the measurements were done here below about 5 GeV, and you see that the best experiments through repeated flights did a very good job in defining the antiproton spectrum and the antiproton over proton ratio. And above 5 GeV, there was just one measurement here with large error bars. And this, by the way, is a model calculation by Moskalenko, Strong, and Reimer, and shows the pure secondary production of antiprotons. And what we, of course, did need were high statistics measurement in the 5 to 50 GeV regime. Now, I said before that the secondaries test the primary nucleon component, and here's an example, and I'll talk a little bit about that this morning. And in the right panel here is shown the diffuse gamma ray flux measured by EGRID, and what you see is that the model calculations, which are based on the local measured spectra of protons and electrons, and again, this was done by Moskalenko, Strong, and Reimer, describes the measurements by EGRID, those are the black band, describe it rather well. But we also see that at higher energies, above about 5 GeV, the EGRID spectrum is much harder than what one would expect. And so the question was raised, could that be due to the fact that the proton spectra are not everywhere, the same as a local one, observed ones. So for instance, do we have a hard nucleon component? And such a hard nucleon component would show up in the antiproton over proton ratio here at high energies, and you see would show up just like that. And what is obvious is that at the higher energies is where you're most sensitive to measure that. Very briefly, the heat p-bar experiment, it's basically a high energy physics experiment with several detectors here to define the particles charge, line, and momentum. This is done here in a superconducting magnet that has at the core a hodoscope that basically measures the rigidity or the bending of the particle. Then we have several stacks of proportional chambers. We have a total of 140 layers, and you need that many layers in order to get rid of your large fluctuations in the Landau tails. And that measures the energy loss and identifies the particle. And of course, you have some triggers, the scintillators. This is how the experiment looks like. And I'm running really out of time, so let me skip through that. Very briefly, to show you how well the heat experiment does identify particles, as I just said, here we measure in the hodoscope, we measure the bending, and that tells you if you have a positive or a negative rigidity, basically. And in those DEDX modules, in the chambers above and below the magnet, we measure the energy loss, we sample the energy loss, and that from that, we are getting our particle mass. And you see down here, you have the antiprotons. And here you have, for instance, the electrons. And it just the red and the black is before and after cuts are applied. And what I wanted to point out is, if you look here, how highly Gaussian this is over four orders of magnitude. And that, thank you, and that allows for a very good particle separation. And those are the results from, this was one balloon flight in the year 2000, and that has already been published. And what we see is, those are the red points, those are the ones from the heat experiment. They are consistent with the purely secondary production of antiprotons. This would be this line here. And there is certainly no support for a hard nucleon ejection spectrum. And together with measurements by other groups, particularly with the best measurements here at the lower energies, the data which we have now in hand are in very good agreement with the standard spectrum as has been calculated. And even so, this is a rather precise measurement. You see the error bars are quite large. And so the prospects to see a primary antiproton component here are not very good. Moving on to positrons, the secondary positron production is also done in the interstellar gas, comes from the pions and the muons. And what's different for the positrons is that they lose energy very rapidly, so they are much more local than the antiprotons we observe here. Prior, I don't want to discuss it too much, but prior to around 1995, there were a lot of measurements. Here again, what is measured here is a positron fraction rather than the positron flux. All the measurements prior to 1995 indicated that there might be a rise of this fraction at higher energies, and that also started some discussions about a non-secondary or primary positrons. But however, newer measurements showed that this is not the case, and in particular, I want to discuss those red dots here. Those are the heat measurements from 94 and 95. And those have been done, and this is important to remember, those have been done with a completely different instrument, the only part that was used in both heat experiments was a superconducting magnet. So those are now just the heat measurements. And what one sees here is that at the lower energies, the data fit very, very nicely the pure secondary production of positrons as calculated by Muskelenger and Strong. But here in the neighborhood of about 8 GeV, we see that there is some kind of a structure. And this is very difficult to explain with purely secondary production. And one of the questions, of course, is the interesting question is this structure due to a primary positron component from dark matter. And just very briefly to show you again, I basically want to tell you with those graphs what a great job he does, and this is not due to any kind of systematic effect or misreconstruction. This is, as I said, this is that's an older heat experiment where mostly electrons were measured. And there's a calorimeter and a transition radiation detector. And again, you see that in the transition radiation detector, how nicely electrons are separated from the protons. And here in the calorimeter, again, a good separation. So this is just redrawn in a different graph on a linear scale. So those are the heat data points from the experiment flown in 94 and 95. I listed here all the conditions, what the residual atmosphere was. There were two different geomagnetic cutoff rigidities that depends on where you launch. If you go to more northern latitudes, that was launched at Lynn Lake, you are about at 1 GeV, and here nearby here in New Mexico, you're around 4 GeV. And again, you see in this one, the structure here. Remember now that the more recent heat flight, I showed that earlier, that we also can distinguish positrons and not only antiprotons. So we use this experiment to extract our positron data here, and lo and behold, see, this measurement also showed, although we have only three data points, showed very clearly a structure here in the same energy regime. And if you combine all the data, we get something like that. And what you see here is that So three different flights were taken at different times in the solar cycle. They were taken with different instruments. They were taken at different geomagnetic cutoff fertilities. So all of that contributes to the fact that it's very difficult to explain any of that with a systematic effect. And as I just said, this is very, very hard to see that this is consistent with a purely secondary production. Now let me skip through that. One of the first papers that pointed out that there is a possibility to see a signature of dark matter decay in the positron fraction was a paper by Kamikaze and Turner. And what they did is they looked at heavy neutralinos that go through a resonant Z or W production, and then you see down the decay line. You see the at those about 10 GeV energies, you see the positrons, and what has been done here is the Wundt mass has been fitted to match best the heat data, and the best fit is for it's hard to see, but it's a 380 GeV Wundt, and of course, as I said earlier, there are other astrophysical explanations or possibilities for such a structure. Also, the fit is not as good, but this, for instance, shows such a structure in the positron spectrum due to positrons from interaction of cosmic rays with giant molecular clouds. And other papers have been, or that have looked into the production of electrons through Wundt decay. And here, for instance, this is more recent, and the difference here to the previous one is that there is a different treatment of the propagation. Here, this is a diffusion model, whereas before that was just a leaky box. And again, you see this in red here. You see a possible contribution to the positron fraction. Also, the fit is not very good. It requires a rather heavy WIMP. It's about 200 to 300 GeV. And because they use thermal production of the WIMPs, the boosting factor that is required to give you a large enough signal is rather high, in the neighborhood of 100. And if I'm completely running out of time, let me go to this slide. This is a calculation by Kane, Bogordy, Kane, and others. Again, he's going through neutralinos decaying into Ws. And you get a positron signal, as you can see here. And The most important difference is that the boost factor required here to produce such a signal is much lower. And that has to do with that this is a non-thermal production. And one thing I wanted to say here is, no matter what model has been used, what you see is that it's very, very difficult to produce this apparently narrow structure that it's been seen here. And the reason for that is that even, and Kane has shown that, even if you use a delta function here, any signal, any positron signal is washed out due to the decay and also due to the galactic propagation. So you always get a signal that is much more washed out than what you would fit by eye here. Let me come to conclusions. First, the antiproton measurements. The heat measurements are certainly very consistent with the purely secondary production of antiprotons and are in agreement with the standard spectrum as it was calculated by Moskalenko and others, and there is no support for any of the hard nucleon ejection models. So there is nothing out of the extraordinary. And the positrons, new positron fraction measurement we have done confirms the results from previous flights of the heat experiment. we again see a feature, and this feature has now been seen at different geomagnetic cutoff rigidities, different periods in the solar cycle, and with completely different techniques, experimental techniques. The positrons we measure appear to be mainly from secondary production, but there certainly is a feature above about 7 GeV. And as I said, none of the existing models explain the structure well, and the question we still ask is this feature due to dark matter annihilation? The feature can be reproduced with a number of realistic models. Also, the fits are not perfect, and we certainly need more measurements now to confirm the structure and to establish its nature. Thank you. Katie probably knows, well, no, Katie does know much more about that than I do, not probably. But part of the answer is that the antiprotons come from a very different regime than the positrons. The positrons are much more local. So antiprotons come from much further away. So this is, see, also boost models require that you have some clumpiness. So there is no smooth distribution of the WIMPs. So when you see what I'm saying? You don't necessarily produce it at the same site.
I said if they're caused by neutrino annihilation,
right,
then the antiprotons are coming from the same process as the positrons. Then all you have to worry about is propagation. So the question is, if you pick your propagation model, you'll either see antiprotons of low energy or you won't. You'll see your positrons.
Well, in the surviving models for the what could produce a signal, that antiprotons, what the models that would overproduce antiprotons have been thrown out. So that's a constraint. There's a number of constraints put in, and that's one of them.
Okay, all right. So you select it out.
Yeah.
I've seen some papers claiming you can have neutron problems about that. Have you looked
at neutron problems? We have not. I mean, it is not within our. It is not possible for us to see a signal in our data. Pardon?
What clumping factor? How clumping?
Factor of at least 10. One thing I disagree with him about is that he's worried about the fact that it's hard to get a bump. You can get it with neutrinos, you can get an excess, but not a bump. But, I mean, if you do this, that's a by-eye problem. If you do it statistically,
right,
the chi-square is okay. So that I'm not worried about. But you do have to have a boost of at least a factor of 10.
Yeah,
maybe
even more.
For thermal production. Yeah, so some local overdensity of a factor of 10 for some reason. Mm-hmm. Well, the halo was clumpy, but, you know, are we sitting in one?
It should help to keep ground.
Well, let's thank Mike again.